last week during Jim Garner's moving testimonial, he made a startling and guilty confession. He admitted under duress of microphone and spotlight that he was a theist. Well, when the shock had dissipated from the room, it reminded me of something that is to me as a Unitarian Universalist embarrassing. It's not a confession that should be made, and it's not a question that should, in a sense, be asked. I have, over 40 years that I have been doing this, had any number of people, often from 12-step programs, but not always, come and say, we really like your congregation, and we really like Unitarians, and even some Universalists, but is it okay if I believe in a higher power or a God? We're not doing our job if being a theist is a confession, and if people have to ask if it's okay. Now, I understand where it comes from, and I'm going to get into that in some, not, I hope, belabored detail. It comes from only understanding half of our tradition. And half of our tradition is we are not required to have any theological position. But the other half of that is, nor are we forbidden a theological position. At one time, it's true that Unitarian meant those who deny the Trinity and affirm only the unity of God. But I would argue that over time, particularly in the United States and Canada, there's been an evolution effectively about what Unitarian means. And it's no longer, in my view, a theological position, and certainly not a negative theological position, because there are Trinitarian Unitarians. There are pagan Unitarians who believe in lots of gods. There are atheist Unitarians who don't believe in any God or that the word is useful. Today, Unitarian, I believe, really actively refers to our sense of the unity of humanity, that we see ourselves as united as a species, as related one to another. It is, to me, a statement about our lives and not about the symbols that motivate us and inform us. The issues of theology are interesting. They're fun. I enjoy them. I teach theology, and I've taught theology in graduate schools for the better part of four decades. And both philosophy and theology are really lots of fun. They're ways to try to get a handle on those things that we use to guide us, those things from which we derive a sense of meaning and purpose, a reason to get up in the morning, a reason to try to be good or at least try to be better. Our theology doesn't say very much about the ultimate source of reality. For me, I don't find the various labels, whether theist or atheist or polytheist, particularly useful. I use them, but I use them with a kind of unconstitutional vagueness, because it's not an ology in the sense of a science. I think much of humanity ends up debating and arguing and yelling and screaming and killing over metaphors, because that's what theology is. It's a metaphor for the source of being, for the mystery of existence and of life. Is one theology necessarily better than another? It depends on what you do with it. There are those who argue, for example, passionately, there is one God and one God only, and anything else is an abomination and hateful before the Lord. And you can find scriptural foundation for that particular view. There are people who argue equally passionately, Jonathan Kirsch, who has been a guest speaker here, argues that polytheism is a more peaceful religion than monotheism, because with monotheism you've got this angry, irrational God, and with polytheism you just have lots of gods, and that teaches tolerance. I have to say that when I look at history, I can't find a particularly good argument to support either position. You can have one God with amazing loving kindness as your role model, or angry and jealous and violent. We also make the assumption, I think unsupported by scriptural evidence, that God is automatically good and ought to be listened to. That's just kind of the default position of Western theology. When God says to Abraham, I'd like you to get up really early in the morning and saddle your ass, that's the Bible's line, not mine, and take your son to the mount and have him carry the wood for a sacrifice and then kill him, Moses says, okay, I didn't have much to do today anyway, and never questions God. When God says to Moses on the Exodus, you know, your guys have been misbehaving, so I'd like you to kill, basically decimate the ranks and go through and kill 3,000 of them if you don't mind. Moses says, oh, well, God asked it, so who am I to question? And the people were taught to put on their swords and go out and slay their fellow Hebrews. It's not much of an argument, in my view, for the ultimate goodness of the traditional God figure. But polytheism doesn't seem to have any better results. Instead of one sometimes loving, sometimes angry God, you get a lot of jealous, loving, hating, warring, bickering, and constantly, passionately, sexually inflamed deities up in a pantheon. And when I look at history, I don't find one group to be more peaceful and reasonable or less peaceful and reasonable than any other, because you're dealing with the common denominator is that when we talk about our gods, we're talking about ourselves and the systems we use to try to derive a sense of meaning and purpose. We're talking about metaphors, and we're talking about projections. In the West, we want to know, but doesn't there have to be an ultimate reality, that there's a God or there isn't a God? Well, not necessarily. When we're talking about metaphors, take just the nice Greek word atom. It meant solid and indivisible, the ultimate building block of reality. And then by the 19th century, it started throwing off electrons, and a lot of space started developing in that atom. And then there were X-rays, and then there were radium watches, and then there were atom bombs. And the atom that I grew up with in the 50s, the Walt Disney atom, that's a product tie-in here. The congregation gets something every time I mention Disney. And the Disney atom was a little solar system, and all of a sudden there was space, and then that went away, and there were subatomic particles. And then there were more subatomic particles than there were elements. And then there was more space than there was solidity in that ultimate solid building block. And now it's quivering strings of energy all over the place. And just like our theologies, we don't know where anything is at any particular given time. It's a metaphor, I think, for how we want ultimate definitions, and those ultimate definitions are not always very helpful. They're an interim house of cards. Looking at theology, looking at atoms, is a little bit like looking at water. Is water solid? Is it vapor or is it liquid? And the answer is yes. It depends on what state we're looking at it in. So when we look at all of these various theologies, I don't know. Sometimes I have a sense of connection to the ultimate source of being, but I can't set it in bronze and stick it on my mantle, Sometimes I feel disconnected and, as the song goes, lost out here in the stars. Sometimes I feel like a theist. Sometimes I feel, I almost never feel like an atheist because that's too much of a commitment. But when you're a theist, most of the time, if you close your eyes and picture God, you're picturing Zeus. You're picturing an old white guy in a beard on a golden throne in a toga, which if Ron were wearing a toga right now, you pretty much have nailed the image of God. And I got to tell you, that's not what I worship. Nothing personal, Ron, but that's not it. That's a picture in our heads that we use to symbolize things and not the ultimate reality itself. We look at what are the influences of theology, and I have to say, from my viewpoint, they are not very great. Like a Rorschach test, we find the God that we want, who tells us with just amazing regularity to do exactly what it was that we wanted to do anyway. And so we get to rationalize our behavior as being divinely inspired. And yet, the question, the great religious existential question raised not so much by Dostoevsky, but in Dostoevsky, is if there is no God, is everything permitted? Is anything permitted? Can you just do anything at any time and there are no rules? I think this is a false dichotomy. We want to have something to base our lives on, our ethics on, our morals on. We want there to be, and Shakespeare's words in a different context, we want there to be an ever-fixed mark, a North Star that we can use to navigate. We want to be able to have a solid foundation on earth and a sign up in the sky that we can set our moral compass to in order to guide our actions and our behavior. It isn't necessarily that our North Star gives us the rules. I don't hear the North Star speaking to me at night, although I can find it inspiring. It is that we want there to be something that prevents the absolute relativism of having no moral compass whatsoever. Having a God does not particularly give you a moral compass. Your God can demand terrible things from you. It is just remarkable, as everyone knows who studies history, how many terrible things and atrocities are done on God's order. So having a God does not protect you from doing barbarism, and not having a God doesn't make you better or worse either. When we look at actual life and history, we see that there have been deeply religious societies that did good, that clothed the naked, that fed the hungry, and there have been deeply religious societies that used all of their religion to rationalize their anger, their hatred, their greed, the rejection of the stranger, however they understood that stranger. There have been terrible religious monsters in the world. But nor does atheism protect a society from running off the rails in the name of history, in the name of the people, in the name even of a utopian vision, from a Stalin and 20 million killed to a Pol Pot, to many of the excesses of Mao and the Cultural Revolution, to Sukarno. You have monsters who were atheists also. So for me, the great questions are not, are you an atheist? Are you a theist? Are you a polytheist? Are you a monotheist? The great questions are, how do we extract from the various poetic systems that human beings have created over time some way to be kinder and more decent? To find a way to motivate ourselves, to see the humanity in the eyes of others. For some, God is very useful. For some, God is not very useful. For some, the issue of the essential theology, that there is some intelligence behind creation, or the idea that what we do creates meaning, these meet in a common place when we take them seriously and not literally. And the common place they meet in is what we do, what we choose, how we are, either creates that meaning or discovers that meaning. And where we join together in that social contract is, I won't beat you up over what you use to motivate yourself. Don't beat me up over my poetry. Because all of this, to me, is about the poetry. It's about the metaphors. And ultimately, as the Gospels say, it is by our fruits that we are known, not by our theology. I don't much care about belief. I care about action. I don't much care what somebody's theology or their religious denomination is. There are good and decent people of every religion in the world. There are miserable human beings of every religion in the world. There are good and decent people who have no religion, and there are miserable people who have no religion. The issue is, what do we do? We all want a star. We all want that Star of Bethlehem to guide us to some holy place. We want that pillar of fire in the desert to guide us from slavery towards a new life. We want an ever-fixed mark that tells us for sure that we are doing the right thing. Well, the bad news, as opposed to the good news, is I want that North Star. I'm sorry, I've disappointed the baby already. I wanted that North Star also. But the North Star is not what most of us think it is. The North Star is a title. It isn't really an object. The star that we call Polaris is the brightest visible star hovering near the North Pole. But in the Earth's axis perturbation, as it turns, as the sky moves, nothing is standing still. And our North Star today is not the North Star of 1,000 years ago. And it's not the North Star of 1,000 years in the future. That's a role that the star visible closest to the pole will play. So I want that ever-fixed mark, and I don't know where it is, and it doesn't stay fixed. We have to keep observing. We have to keep thinking. We have to keep owning our own choices and trying to do the best we can, which is better than we have done. And we try to do the right thing, not simply because it says so in a book, but because we have examined it. For me, as unhelpful as I think labels are, I am a pragmatist, an existentialist, and a religious humanist. Altogether, what that does is it keeps me busy trying to look at life, to look at the world, to look at the responsibilities that I hear call me, and measure those calls against the values that I have also examined. I don't have one fixed mark that I can always depend on. I have to stop, step back sometimes, and ask, what do we do now? How do we accommodate ourselves, our needs, to the infinite possibilities and pain and joy and wonder in the world? Our relationships are dynamic. We are related one to another. We find out who we are by how others react to us. I the joke with Jennifer, I am convinced deep in my heart that I'm a wonderful singer. All of the world conspires to tell me that's not true. I have to believe them. I don't, but I have to. I have to try to, and I understand that when I treat somebody with respect or disrespect, I'm having an impact on them. When the way that we treat each other, the way that we see respect or rejection reflected in other people's eyes is crucial to who we are and how we think of ourselves. So to me, the structure of the world, the psychology of the individual within a group is we are not alone. We are related one to another. And we help and hinder each other in becoming the best and the most fulfilled and the most fulfilling to others by the love, by the respect, by the search for living, changing principles, and not simply the reliance on memorized fixed marks. The world turns, the axis wobbles, the stars, the fixed stars, are not as fixed as they seem. And in this dynamic universe, we too are active players with tremendous power, tremendous responsibility. And that goes on as long as we live.